Hi, I'm Chick McGee, and we're off the air.
Let's do this.
In the morning, in the back of the Beamer. Now, mama, what's up? I know that you're a schemer, but you can't be frontin' when it comes to this.
Put down your back cheeks. Where's your headphones? Put your headphones on. Are you not ready?
I think you should have asked me that before.
He pulled the trigger awful quick.
Thanks for downloading the podcast. That's Jess. Hi, Jess.
Hey.
There's Jason.
Hi, Chick.
Oh, okay. We're going to start out that way.
What?
Okay. No, no, it's fine.
We've never started a podcast like that.
We were talking. We were recording.
Oh.
Remember, if you're in the room. Oh, and your headphones are on. I didn't give you a chance to get your headphones on.
That's okay.
All right.
I think he's just being courteous.
It's like if you touch the ball, you have to catch it. You know?
Any part of your hand gets on the ball, you should make the catch.
You should catch it.
That's what Chris Carter said. That's Jim Gaffigan, as you can probably tell. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you? You know me from NFL Game Day.
That's right. He works behind the scenes. Well, every now and then he'll be on camera at NFL. Is that what we're going to do?
I don't know.
Does that happen a lot?
What? People think
that people go, hey, who you?
Are you?
Aren't you?
I got off the plane in Indy.
You know, you have a Phil Simms, Boomer Esiason look.
There's, but I'm good looking.
Right, sure.
But I, sometimes I'll get confused for Philip Seymour Hoffman, but I got off the plane at the airport, and I went into this store where they're selling all the Colts memorabilia, and I said, do you have any pajamas for little kids? And the lady said, oh my God, oh my God, I can't believe it's you. And I go, whoa, thanks. And she goes, you're Gary Owen, aren't you?
Gary Owen?
And I was like, wow, I've never heard that. And I said, I'm not Gary Owen.
I don't know who Gary Owen is.
I think he's a comedian.
He is?
I think he's a comedian.
Could this woman have hit her head before you came in? I mean,
I think he's...
well, now I have to look
up
Gary
Did you have
Gary
to Google
Owen.
Him?
I did a search on Twitter.
Yeah.
And, but I follow most comedians, but I didn't follow him. But I don't know, there's, because I've been compared to every blonde comedian.
Okay, yeah.
Or red-haired comedian.
Well, you know who he looks like to me? He looks like Biff from Back to the Future a little bit.
Yeah.
This Gary Owen guy.
Yeah.
But isn't that guy a comedian?
Yeah, he is.
Tom Wilson.
Tom Wilson, yeah.
Thomas F. Wilson, right?
Oh, my God.
There's a couple
so
Tom Wilsons, right? I don't know.
There's Tim Wilson.
Tim and Tom.
Let's see how many comedians we can name.
Yes.
I'm curious. Yes. How famous is Gary Owen?
I don't know. Pretty famous.
Okay.
So, how many Twitter followers?
I think. I mean, I recognize the name.
Okay.
You know.
Well, it's a common name.
But I'm just going to say, Jim, you've been at it for a while. You've probably worked with just about everybody.
Sinatra?
Right?
You work with Sinatra?
I have not worked with Sinatra.
Gary Owen is verified, and he has 140,000 followers.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
I know the name.
He has more followers than I do.
I think he works in a lot of urban rooms. I think it's like a
I know who you're talking about now. He's very popular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A pale guy that's popular with the urban.
Yes. I know
which
exactly
is not that
who
rare.
He is now.
Jess is
exactly
our resident rap urban expert. Right?
Don't say that.
What? You like rap music more than I do, more than Jason does.
Definitely more than me.
That makes you...
What rap music do you like?
I like the Jay-Z.
Mm-hmm.
I like Monster.
When
I
you
that.
Say the before
I know,
it, it's
I'm
like
doing
when you
it
say
as a
I'm
funny
go-
thing.
No, but he also I want to go get
this is serious.
And he does this. I go get a Wendy's burger.
I'm gonna get
a Wendy's burger. He does that too. It's not. I'm gonna go get a burger at Wendy's.
And I'll say, let's go have an Arby's.
And I'm like, stop saying that.
But it's amazing how, like, I mean, you see the relationship back there because there's certain things that my wife will say, and I'll be like, if she does that again, I'm going to kill her. It's almost kind of like
but
when
you still like her, though, right? Sure.
Of course. But there's like, I remember growing up, if my brother was in a really good mood, I would think, I have to get him in a bad mood.
That's my job.
Now, well, you do that with your brother, right?
Don't no,
you
I do the
brother?
Opposite.
You try to get him in a good
I'm the
mood.
Oldest, though. It's just, that's a part.
Are you the oldest, Jim? Yeah.
I'm the youngest of six.
You're the
I
baby.
I knew he was the youngest. That's why he said, I try to get him in a bad mood. That's the opposite.
Mm-hmm. You're ornery.
How old are you? I mean, what are you?
Okay.
You're the oldest of what?
I'm the oldest of four.
Yeah.
And I'm 32, and my youngest sister is 17.
You know, the oldest child is always the victim. It's like,
that's not true.
You're and the youngest, because the youngest,
the martyr.
The youngest is always portrayed as a baby and as spoiled, and we really don't care because it's not true.
What about the only? I'm an only.
The only, you know, there's a lot of only lonely only kids now. Most parents have one kid.
I want to start a group. I want to start an only support group. A big Donnie Baker, Ron Sexton, the guy who does Donnie Baker, he's an only. That's the only other only I can think of. There are a lot of comedians.
Mike Mark's wife's an only. Yeah. You guys always bond
over
that.
Yeah, Michelle Allison's an only. I gotta think of some comedians who are only children. I think
Al Lubell.
Maybe
Al
Gary
Lubell
Owen.
Is not an only.
I think he is an only. I don't know. I don't know.
You know, this might be the first time I come out and publicly say, I don't care for Al Lubell's comedy.
Really?
I don't. I think I saw him.
I kind of like it.
I saw him on stage because he does the Al Franken thing, right? He goes, I'm sure you're probably wondering how this affects me, Al
Yeah,
Lubell.
No, he does the a real deep exploration of narcissism.
Okay. So, but he's really good at acting like he's a narcissist, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think maybe he is a narcissist.
Oh, yeah. But I'm sure that, I mean, I am too. I mean,
aren't we all really, though? I think we all are.
You're a lot better. Yeah, I'm probably a narcissist.
I'm sure we are.
We're outgoing. We're performers.
Yeah.
We're in showbiz, right?
Well, yeah, we are.
I like the way Al Lubell looks.
You do?
Yeah.
Got like a dark, no?
No, I do. I like the way he looks.
How does he look?
He,
what does he look like? Al Lubell. Right?
He's one of those guys that you don't know if he's Jewish or Italian.
Oh, like a Paul Mercurio.
Yeah.
Or,
which one is
Or
he?
A Jim Gaffigan.
Or a Jim Gaffigan. Dark and olive skinned.
I wish I was ethnic. I'm nothing. I'm Irish, but
Indiana,
you know, 300 years ago, came over here, indentured servant. Like, my ancestors worked in coal mines. Did your ancestors work in coal mines?
I'm like, if you want to get serious, I'm like German and Dutch, I guess, or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
My family's off the boat Italian.
You're Italian. Yeah. Yeah. Her
like
grandmother
1926.
Was.
1926.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about you over there?
I'm proudly pale. Not as pale as you, but I'm proudly
You can't
pale.
Really be proud of being pale, because then that slides into the Nazi thing. So they come in. Right?
But your paleness is nice. It's not transparent. You have a pretty complexion.
It's not like Tim Cavanaugh pale.
Yeah. Yeah.
You think so?
Where it's like, do you have a disease? Yeah. That's how
Well, Larry Bird's pretty pale too, right?
No, but paleness is the last thing you notice about Larry Bird.
I think pale works on women. I think it's hard for a guy.
Oh, I don't like
it's
a pale.
Like red hair.
I don't care for a pale woman.
You don't pale?
A redheaded woman. No.
Yeah, they have nice ceramic like skin.
Yeah. Porcelain, right? Porcelain.
Yeah, porcelain.
Very, very romantic. Very.
Yeah.
She had porcelain
it
skin.
Works.
I've seen that somewhere. I don't care for it.
But for guys, I feel like it's a burden. I mean, obviously, on the spectrum of horrible things that could happen to people, pale skins. You know,
you're not going to see
lags behind slavery,
a telethon,
you know, and anti-Semitism. But pale skin, it's annoying.
You go to why don't you go to a tanning booth? Do you not tan?
No, he just reds probably.
I would just red.
Yeah, he can go. He can be in the sun for 12 minutes, and it looks like he's been on vacation for 2 weeks.
You would say I'm kind of tan right now, right? Wouldn't you say that?
Yeah, but that's
always,
just how you look.
Yeah.
I go to a tanning booth.
You do?
I do, but like I can't go any more than like once every 15 days. Yeah. If I do, I'm not
What's
joking.
What's more embarrassing is that he knows that.
If I do, I'm too tan.
No, let me tell you something. If you go to a tanning booth
go ahead.
More than once a year, you're a lunatic.
Is that right?
I think so.
That's
Unless you're a 14-year-old girl.
Well, maybe deep inside I am a 14-year-old.
No, but now tan, you tan because it feels good and also...
I'm tan because I think I look better a little tan than I do
But you're naturally tan.
I don't know if I'm that naturally...
More olive? I don't know.
Maybe.
It's remarkable.
Fast. I'm jealous.
Yeah.
I'm jealous.
That's what it is. You're lashing out.
I'm jealous. There's a lot of jealousy.
And after he tans, he likes a good Gary Owen show.
Yep.
I don't know Gary.
I'm surprised. I thought that every single comedian has been on the Bob and Tom show. Wouldn't you say generally?
By now, it feels that way, but there's still There's still a few. No,
there are some that haven't been on.
There are some that, yeah.
There are some that have been on that we don't want to have back right. on. Yeah.
I remember,
but that's
the first,
like anything else.
I remember the first time I was on Bob and Tom. There was rules like to not be dirty. And I remember thinking, well, right. this doesn't really concern me.
Right.
But I guess, so do you ever get people that get on? And, you know, because we're doing a podcast, so I could
sure,
say
sure.
shit and fuck. But right, on right. a radio show, are there people that are like, no, I need to say that?
Oh, no, I get it. I get all the time. They'll lean over to me because they don't, I don't know why, because I guess Bob and Tom's names are on the show. They don't feel like they can talk to them, especially if it's their first visit. So I get yeah. the, hey, can I say swollen vagina or something like that? And I'll go, no, no, let's not say that. And I go, but you can say vagina if you'd like. I don't know. I don't.
Why, so you just use your why. Own discretion. You don't really know.
Who, me?
Yeah. When you tell them, it's just because you don't want to hear a punchline with the word swollen
no,
vagina.
No, no, no. That's, I think no. that it's,
you can't be, I mean, that. It's weird about what you can humor, say and what you can't say.
The humor is that people think that, like, they, there's many comedians that think, all right, well, I'm clean. I don't mm-hmm. say the seven words.
Right.
But they talk about, you know, like eating ass, and they're like, but I don't say ass. And so, no, I've opened for guys. I've had guys open for me. They're like, where they talk about like going down on a woman, and they're like, but I didn't curse. And I'm like, but that,
yeah,
there's still 12-year-olds in the yeah, audience. I don't care. It's like they, you know, like whenever someone opens for me and they're like, do I need to be clean? I know you're Mr. Clean. I'm like, you can do whatever you want. But these people are not going to respond to some right. of the irreverence mm-hmm. that right. works in a comedy club at 11 o'clock at night.
It's really odd what you... It got real stringent and, I guess, tight about what you could say right after the Janet Jackson thing. Everything kind of went crazy.
Right. And that was from top down, too. That's like...
Right. Yeah. Everybody was scared. Everybody was going to get fined for saying yeah. something. Or worse yet, one of our affiliates was going to get their license taken away. Wow. And that's like the death penalty.
No pressure.
Yeah. So, but technically you can say pussy as far as, oh, well, I'm a big pussy. You know, you can say that, right. but you can't say, boy, he really pounded that pussy last night. You can't say that, but right. you can call someone a pussy. I don't know what the difference is.
I do.
But, okay, go ahead. No, I know what the difference No, you know, I know what the difference is, but right. I don't know.
Are you sure?
Oh, I pounded some pussy. Yeah, that's all I'm. But oh, no, the point goodness. Is. Name calling, I guess it's not an actual thing, I guess. And is that, am I making sense? Maybe not.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. No, it is. I think it is interesting because I think that censorship is, it's an important thing that we should not have censorship, but I also think that it's kind of like buying pot. It's like, I personally think pot should be legal, mm-hmm. but I don't think it's that hard to come across it. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
Like, I think that we shouldn't have censorship, but it's not as if free speech is under attack. I mean, I have friends that think that free speech is under right. attack, but
right.
I, you know, I don't think that that's an issue that a lot of people are dealing with. You know, no one's going to jail.
Right.
For saying,
I always have the issue with like, you know, whether it be an NFL coach or a player, mm-hmm. if they say something bad about an official, they'll get fined. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Isn't that violate free speech?
I think that's more about
why can't they state their opinion? I know whether it's within the confines of who they work.
Well,
for.
Well, no, that's like functioning in a workplace. I would
but
think.
Still,
yeah.
What, I couldn't say bad things could about you, chick?
Can you imagine?
Not really.
You can. No, you can't. No. Well.
What
if, I guess what if I'm telling the truth?
I think also in the NFL, it's a very violent game, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's holding, you know, it's holding some kind of authority that, I mean, those poor guys, they're dressed like zebras. You know, it's not like they have that much authority anyway. And if like the players could yell at them, what would stop them from hitting them? Mm. I don't know. I played in the NFL for 25 years.
And you were one of the best.
It was a violent thing. Me and Incognito.
The game is lost, you know? That you're out of there.
Yeah, it's fine.
I was never a part of a culture like that.
The name-calling thing?
Yeah, the name-calling and the busting balls and the you can use the N-word. And You know, I mean, I don't think I'd ever be comfortable using that word.
I don't think any of us are ever going to be a part of the culture where we can use the N-word.
No, well, they had an interesting discussion on, pardon the interruption, last week about this whole thing and incognito as an honorary black person and all this. And Wilbon brought up a good point. I think it might be generational. I think the guys in the NFL locker room now, that is an accepted, they can throw that word around somehow.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting in the comedy world, the N-word. I mean, obviously, I would never come close to it.
Oh, God, no.
But there's a lot of comedians that there was an era where white comedians would try and create a joke where they could earn saying the term. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I mean, I would never do something like that because I'm a great guy.
Yeah.
But
you've been
it's
a great
weird.
Guy for 25 years.
What?
It's weird that that was something that people, I mean, look, you know, the term faggot is something that I never said. I mean, when I was a kid, my brothers and, you know, we used to call each other that, but it's not something that I ever use in my act. And, you know, even on today's show, we were kind of joking with a little homophobia between you and I. And that's almost, you know, that's kind of borderline where it's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I said fairy the other morning to... Who was that? Who was on the phone? Oh, Bill Engvall. Because he was said he had a disco shirt on. And I said, what are you, some kind of fairy?
Yeah.
And I meant it in a comical way, hopefully.
Yeah.
And it's a dated term, obviously. I knew that. And I was just, because nobody hardly.
You were doing a character.
I was messing around. But he goes, what are you, from the late 70s? I'm like. Yeah, that's kind of the point, Bill.
That was the character.
Calm down.
Well, he's on an ABC show right now. He has to keep
Well, that's true, too.
You know, you have to do that. You know, we were just, I was talking about this about my kids, is that for when I was growing up, nobody said the N-word. It wasn't okay. You didn't say it. And I feel like that's how my kids are going to grow up with these terms that we use growing up, like that's gay or, you know, fag or whatever, that those are the terms that my kids are going to go, yeah, I'm not saying that.
Yeah, maybe so.
That's a generational thing.
You know, and I'm not I'm not Mr. PC. And in the end, I'm like, a good-looking guy. No, in the end, I'm just like a guy.
Let's not forget that, yeah.
But there's certain things that I believe our culture, we had to get rid of, you know, racial jokes. And obviously, we had to get rid of, you know, anti-Semitic jokes and all these other homophobic statements, but there's still some justified kind of hate jokes that I have pet peeve about, like when people make fun of midgets. It's like, it drives me crazy.
Okay.
It's like, you know, these are, you know, it's not as if these people are not going to hear this.
Yeah.
It's like if, you know, and I don't even know if the term is midget or whatever, but maybe I'm just kind of like, I was a pale kid and I was kind of picked on a little bit for being pale. But like when I hear midget jokes, and also I feel like it's acceptable for people to make fun of the morbidly obese, and it drives me crazy.
I'm with you on that. When you said the midget thing, that really bothers me with weight jokes. It just... It goes right through me.
It's far more accepted than almost any fat jokes, white trash jokes.
Yeah.
And
Look, I talk about, you know, look, I'm overweight. I talk about my eating and stuff like that. And I'm pretty much white trash upbringing.
You're among friends, Jim.
No, but the whole thing is like, I think there's fun in doses of it, but there's this certain, like even, like I've never seen that show, The Biggest Loser, but like there's part of me that just feels like that's inherently wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't watch it.
It's just, it's well-intended stories of victory that are masked in just ridiculing morbidly obese people. And I just watch that and I'm like, I mean, I don't watch it. I've seen commercials for it, and it's just like, it just looks like a thin person yelling at a fat guy to me.
Mm-hmm.
And these people,
that's all it is.
You know, no one's overweight by choice. Like there are super thin people that are like, yeah, those fat fuckers, they can't fucking, you know, they can't, once you eat a cannoli. It's like, no, that's the enjoyment in their life.
Right.
You know, it's like, it's not that different from someone that gets wasted every night. And, I'm just saying, I do all of those things.
Anyway. Your
I'm a very passionate person.
This is my favorite thing Chick does with our guests. Tell them what they are.
You're very different on stage as far when you perform, as far as almost any other comedian I've ever seen.
You think so? I'm very different from my personality.
No. But you're everybody. Oh, like, we got to go see Gaffigan. You're in that Gaffigan, Regan, Louis C.K. You know what I mean?
Because of
your uniqueness, and you're not mean-spirited, and if you are, it's against yourself, and you don't curse that much. I mean, you didn't set out to do that, did you?
No, I think that...
he did not want to be successful. No, that was not the plan.
No, you know, the weird thing... Look, let's be...
I'm not on trial here.
I'll be totally honest with you. I would curse occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
But it was,
could you feel it when you did? The audience was uncomfortable with you doing it. Is that why you stopped or you were?
No, there was some of it was that, you know, look, I used to have a joke about, you know, it's like, I hate how you do one thing and you just do something once and people never let you forget it. You know, like whenever I go home, people are like, oh, welcome home, donkey fucker. Right. And so that's fine. Right.
Right.
And so, but the problem is when you're building an hour, mm-hmm. or even when you're headlining in a club, 45 minutes, it's like, how do you follow that? How do you, and really, I think I subtracted, like when I did my first album for Comedy Central, I was instructed to add curse words. And I remember thinking, what do you mean? And they're like, well, because you're kind of clean and, you know, there's this corporate belief that young kids want to hear people curse.
You know, I'm glad you're mentioning this because I heard you and Tom in the hallway this morning talking about something. And you said you couldn't get colleges or anything unless you're on Comedy Central. So it's still very much about the young people. Is that true?
Well, look, people that consume live stand-up comedy have time to go out. You know, so they're in their early 20s, and they're people that are watching Comedy Central. So, like, my next special will probably be on Comedy Central. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was talking to Tom about. Because it's one of those. But back to the clean thing is that when I started doing appearances on Letterman and Conan, you can't curse on network television.
Right.
And what would happen is that I would realize that I would have to rewrite a joke to be on network television. And then I would realize that I would become aware that I didn't finish writing the joke. Like, anyone knows that if you throw like a fuck in a joke, it's like, it's a bomb, right? That's why it's called an F-bomb, mm-hmm. because it just has some shock value to it. And what I realized is that just indicated that I was not done writing the joke. But
because that was the funny part of the joke, you saying fuck, obviously.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so some of it is the clean thing. By the way, I followed Brian Regan at a corporate event, and they thought I was the edgiest thing in the world. So...
I mean,
I don't know. So there's a fine line with... just as we were joking around about somebody who doesn't curse, some of it is topic matter too, right?
Right.
It's, you know, it's not that I don't, you know, like sex topics and stuff like that. Some of it doesn't flow into other material. Like some people, like Chris Rock can go from political satire into a sex joke. I can't pull it off. So it's like my narrative has to have some logic to it.
Right.
Even when I get to a joke where I'm commenting on something like mankind's association with religion or something like that, it has to move into it through a very basic way. But, you know, there's also part of me that feels, I mean, I'm also from a small town in Indiana, so I don't necessarily feel comfortable even cursing in front of a room full of strangers. That's not to say that I'm shy or bashful, but I also have a personal belief that I don't want anyone to feel guilty about masturbating, but I don't want to hear about it. Mm. I don't.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like people are like, you know.
It's the Midwestern sensibility, isn't it?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not a prude.
No, but we aren't on the Bob and Tom Show. We aren't either. But we get a lot of compliments from a lot of different guests from a lot of different walks of life that tell us, wow, it was really nice being on your show. You guys are nice. You're just polite. You know, but they're used to, they hear radio. They hear morning radio. They think Howard and Opie and Anthony and
that go as extreme as they
hey,
can.
When you're fucking, you know, how do you, you know, and we're just not going to, I mean, even you, obviously on the radio, we're not even going to use a euphemism for, you know, what's your favorite sex position or something like that. I don't think we've ever done that, have we?
What?
Well,
you guys
talk
about some pretty crazy stuff. Well, you're talking about orgies yesterday, and I was like, wow, that seems.
But that's what you guys do well. You dance around it. And it's you're painting a picture without all the really harsh
words. I'd rather be naughty than.
Well, we've had that conversation about you, right. About how you have that ability to be a little bit naughty but still be endearing. And then there's other people that could come in here and possibly sit in your chair and say the same thing, mm-hmm. and you would go, "That guy is awful."
Where's Chick?
That's what they would say. Yeah. There's an exhibitionist side to our culture that I think is. Look, there's a lot of reality shows where it's. I think it's overdone. I don't think we need to know anything more about people. I mean, maybe I'm just. You know, it's just. I don't need to know how Matt Damon picked up his wife in a bar. I'm not interested. But I guess there's a lot of people that are. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, that's what they say though. They've done a lot of research. Gossiping. Hollywood gossip, weight loss, and sex lives, I think, are the top three
topics
that people want to know about.
I don't know.
You know, I think that...
This is according to an institute.
I think... or something you just made up.
No, I've heard that, but I'm not sure what...
Because I think gossip... I think gossip is so wrong.
It's like a disease.
I think it's... It's and look, that's not to say that if I'm getting my hair cut, I'm not going to pick up a magazine. Mm-hmm. But I don't allow that shit in my apartment. You know, like mm-hmm. the gossip stuff. It's mm-hmm. like I don't.
How old's your oldest? Ten?
Nine.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I think that there's, you know, there's, and I don't begrudge someone for enjoying it. I mm-hmm. just think that. That's like one. And by the way, I'm a guy who like freely admits that I eat horribly, but that's some of what my McDonald's joke was about. It's like you can criticize me for eating McDonald's, but like you have your own McDonald's and reading, you know, tabloid magazines or just finding out about this horrible gossip about people's failures, really, yeah, right?
There was a person in my life at one point that was the high point of the week when the Entertainment Weekly would get delivered or when, Inside Edition and Entertainment Tonight was on all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't, I don't know. I guess I'm curious about some stuff, but I'm not, I'd like to say I there are very few people out. I'll be honest. There are very few people I'll gossip with someone about somebody, but I won't. I pick and choose who I gossip with. I guess I don't. Does that make sense?
I think it's. I'm not saying I'm. I don't engage in it occasionally, but I just. I think there's the, my mom used to have People magazine, but she would hide it.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like everyone. You're allowed a guilty pleasure.
Sure.
You know, but it's just, and I just think it's most of our news is made up of that. I mean, even, you know, political discourse is just like, John Boehner cried. You know, it's like, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's like Obama, you know, Michelle Obama ate a cheeseburger. It's like, come on, man.
Oh, well, President Obama's trying to quit smoking.
Right. It's just like, you know, she's. You know, the first lady's trying to deal with obesity in America. She doesn't have to be perfect, right?
Right.
In my opinion.
That's your opinion.
On the opposite end of gossip, you've been on probably one of the best TV shows. Tom would agree. I think Chick might as well. CBS Morning.
You've been on there
a couple times, right?
Once.
Just once.
Oh, yeah, twice, yeah.
Because you
did once with the play.
With the play and then the book.
Yeah.
What's it like working with those guys? Because that seems like top-notch kind of people. They do a really good job, it seems like.
Yeah, you know, I would say that it's it's pretty in depth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's, you know, on the gamut of interviews that you encounter, you know, like, because I'm performing at a college tonight, right?
Right.
And there will be a college review in the newspaper. And some of those college reviews are just insanely brutal,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Just unnecessarily cruel. And then you'll look at, say, someone at the Indianapolis Star might come to a show, and they'll do something. And then you'll talk to someone on the phone for a newspaper, and they'll do an article. And some of it is the amount of time these journalists are exposed to something. But like when you do CBS This Morning, like you shoot 3 days.
Real.
You know, there's a separate pre-interview. There's like all these interviews. Like when I was in the New York Times, it's like the guy talked to me for, I think, 6 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
For one article. So, like, there's some of it is, I think, the amount of time that they send, mm-hmm. they spend on a topic, which I think is interesting.
What kind of, was there a question he asked that you'd like, oh, God, why did he ask that question? What, does he know something about me? No?
I don't know. I think that there's something of, I don't know. Did you ever see this 60 Minutes segment on Larry the Cable Guy?
I didn't, but I kind of know what they probably, the angle they went.
The one thing I remember was that he had a big file, little file drawers, and he would go through them and grab jokes.
Yeah, I just remember the article. There was something rather dismissive of him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, can you believe this guy who doesn't wear a shirt with sleeves is making millions of dollars? Like, there's just this condescension that occasionally you encounter where rather than them looking at, I mean, look, I know that there are plenty of people that think that, Larry the Cable Guy or Dan, you know, mm-hmm. has a political right wing or whatever. But mm-hmm. it's like, it should have been this piece on why is this guy so popular? But it was, I felt like the tone of the piece was, why is this guy so popular?
Right, yeah. Right.
When it
right.
should have been, you know, this is a fascinating thing that yeah. this guy,
well, Jim,
who
you
does
know,
this
I,
character.
I run into guys, bad, worse, and indifferent. Almost all of my close friends are comedians. And a yeah. lot of them are just like, I can't believe Larry the Cable Guy makes the money he does. He's popular and people laugh at those jokes. And there's some of that stuff that Larry's stuff I don't care for, but there's some of it that's pretty funny. He's got pretty good timing. He's got yeah. that character down. Yeah. I mean, you have to, it's just like people ask me about Howard Stern. I got to respect the guy always because he started the idea, had people accept the idea like television had done for a long time. Howard brought syndication of radio yeah. To a wider, you know, all across the country. And it was like, okay, well, this is okay. Maybe we don't have to listen to our local radio station. We can have a syndicated programming, you know?
Yeah.
And Larry's the same way. I mean, well, Dane Cook went through this too. I mean, the marketing but yeah. there are a lot of comedians look down their noses at a lot of other comedians for odd reasons all the time.
Right. I mean, there's always like jealousy factor, right?
Right.
But, and again, I'm not saying, I mean, look, I also think that maybe I'm being naive. I think that like the success of one comedian is good for all comedians.
Yeah.
It's like
right.
we're in this incredible comedy boom. And so I look at Larry the Cable Guy and, you can have artistic differences with him, okay? And you can have artistic differences with Carrot Top, with Dane, with Jim Gaffigan, any of these people. But when 60 Minutes is doing a piece, it shouldn't be an opinion piece. Maybe it should be an opinion piece. But mm-hmm. I was surprised that they didn't look at kind of the fact that, you know, the blue collar tour kind of tapped into this American small town kind of sensibility.
Yeah.
I mean, in a lot of ways, you know, the Larry the Cable Guy is making fun of the small town America and they're enjoying it because mm-hmm. they know him. You know, it's, I don't know. It's weird. I mean, I don't, you know, I don't, I'm not trying to, I don't know. I just feel like there's something strange with some of the backlash on some of these things. And, you know, comedy has witnessed a very interesting past 15 years where there used to be like these comedy stars that were loved by absolutely everyone. Seinfeld and Chris Rock might be the last of it. Mm-hmm. And now it doesn't feel like it's going that
way.
It is
pretty segmented, isn't it? I mean, there's the Pete Holmes and Dimitri Martin and I love those guys. They're all very funny, but is it the younger generation? Is it those damn kids or
no? I don't know. I think that there's something about mainstream success that is unappealing to some people. Like Seinfeld was and Chris Rock still, you know, those guys are still some of the biggest comedians in the country, you know, and you look at like Bill Cosby. I mean, that guy was huge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that'll be the case anymore because it's gotten so segmented and everyone doesn't want to love one comedian. You know, that guy's too mainstream.
I think it's hip to be unhip. So if you like a comedian, you want to be the only person that knows about that comedian. Like you want to go, hey, well, I've got a secret. You should check this out.
Right. This has been going on in music. I think maybe.
Oh, sure. Like when you find something great, it's like, I don't think I really want to share this with anybody.
Right. And then you hear it on the radio. Or
wherever. And then you're like, I don't ever want to hear this again.
I don't
want to
ever hear that again.
I remember when I was in high school and I was at a Bruce Springsteen concert and there was a friend of ours there who was really mad because she said, none of these people here are true Bruce fans. And I remember thinking, why do you care? Mm-hmm. And she's like, but these people don't even know who Bruce is.
It's the bandwagon thing.
It's the Dave Matthews thing. I mean, there are two very different kinds of Dave fans at a concert. I went in college because it was a Dave concert and you went and you drank until you couldn't see and that was it. And so I was on that side of it, like the kind of the fraternity guy side where it's like, we're going to party. And then you have the Dave fans that had camped out for days and, you know, and followed the bus and did the whole thing. And they were really pissed off that we were drinking and being so disrespectful.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, that I think I'm with you, Jim. I don't care what, if I like them, I'm going to like them. Right. Is that what you're saying?
Well, but I can understand there is some kind of a sad... It's kind of yours until,
but it's not
everybody
yours.
Find out.
Well, it's not yours. That they're. It's like Jim. Do you only want 10 people to enjoy your comedy? You want as many people that want to give you reciprocal, you know, back, right?
Yeah,
you don't want to limit.
But think about how picky you could be if you weren't in it for the money. Think about how many you could just have like 5 people come. No, I don't know what I'm saying.
No, I know what you're saying. Well, the thing is I think also success is. You know, there's the sellout thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and the catchphrase thing, and there's the
indie. You know, it's very similar to indie music, right?
Right.
It's,
yeah, absolutely.
It's like that band Fun. There was a time when only a couple people knew them, and now there's probably people that really liked Fun, and now won't admit that they do.
Well, now. There was a band that just broke up, and did Mumford break up or somebody?
They went on hiatus for a little bit. There
people were like joking about that as like, how can we get all those bands like that to break up or something? Because they got insanely popular and they were everywhere, but people liked them better when they were
Suspenders and Beards, and a hard foot drum. Well,
Kings of Leon was that way too. I think
Kings of Leon
took a break because. Yeah. One of them was crazy or something.
Maybe that's what
There's a certain tipping point, right? Like, I always wonder, you know, like, I even tweeted about this. I'm like, I never understood why everyone hated Anne Hathaway. It's like, everyone's like, hope she wins the Academy. I hate her. And you see that, like, when we were kids, I assume you're my age.
Oh, yes.
They're, you know, Stallone, we saw it as a kid, you know, like, Stallone, he wrote Rocky.
Yeah,
he demanded to be in it. And then it was just like, he was despised.
You know, that is true. He was like, he was one of the original producer, writer, director. He wrote Rocky.
That's kind of hard to believe.
And he fought.
Yeah.
How good is
that movie? Well, that almost adds to it. That movie was so great. But then he does.
What was that movie that I watched? I watched a movie with Rocky, Sylvester Stallone in it.
Over the top. He turns his hat around.
No,
he's an arm wrestler.
He's like the father of an Italian family, and it was kind of funny, and it was a comedy, and I don't remember. But that was
Sylvester Stallone was?
Yeah. It was just this random movie that I watched. Hmm. Like, it must have been on HBO a lot when I was a kid because I was watching it all the time.
It's really strange. I mean, I did a couple shows with Bobcat, like, I don't know, maybe 6 years ago. And he would get heckled in the audience in suburban Chicago. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's where his thing, that one of his albums or CDs, he said, "Hey, you don't look the same either," or something like that was the name of his.
Oh, yeah. CD. I don't want to insult you, but you look like Bobcat.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And it's really weird because here's a guy who, you know, now he's got he's a director of films and stuff like that.
We just saw Bobcat last
week. But it was really weird to witness. I would, you know, he's a sweet guy too, and smoke a cigar after the show and all that. And I was just, it was just baffling.
It takes a special kind of person, I think, to go through what Bobcat has gone through, because he was giant and huge, and then he was nothing. But then he had to go out when he was nothing and try to deal with that, and try to, you know, he directed Jimmy Kimmel for how long, and then.
He has all these very successful movies and films now
are on the other side of that. But in the middle of that, I don't know how. I'm sure I couldn't get through something like that. I mean, that would be awful.
It's strange how people, there's almost an anger behind it. Mm. But I don't understand some of the anger towards, I'm not a music guy. I don't understand the angle towards Nickelback. Like, there's anger.
They're too popular, I guess.
There was an anger towards Coldplay.
You know what? Yes, no. No, it's like the star athlete in high school. He's throws 20 touchdowns in four games, and he's, you know, handsome. And there are some guys that, a teammate, he's a great guy, but the other kids are like, it's totally jealousy, and I don't like this guy. You know,
is Nickelback just too good? That bad?
There were a couple songs they had, but then it was just everywhere all
at once.
Whenever
I think of Nickelback, I just think that's douchey. I don't know why. That's the term that comes
but
to mind.
But that's probably been planted.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah. You know what? I can't name a Nickelback song. So
other
there
than
you go.
Tell me what you want. I know that one.
I don't even know that.
I don't even know.
It's like when we look back on like what did Carrot Top ever do wrong?
I've seen Carrot Top stand up. I've never seen him in person.
Yes, you have. He's been here.
Oh, no, I've seen him in person, but I've never seen his stand up. I've never gone to see his stand up. He always plays in Vegas, is why. There's pretty funny stuff that he does.
But he
hasn't done anything to anybody, so why would you not like Carrot Top, right?
Why? I don't know. Why would you expend so much? I mean, again, it's like, I'm not saying I'm perfect. I'm, you know, like, you could probably find. Situations where I'm guilty of this, but it's like, shouldn't we? I mean, what did Pee Wee Herman do wrong? Nothing.
Nothing.
I mean, was he engaged in kind of icky behavior? But it's like, it's not like those theaters are empty. You know, I don't know.
Well, and everybody who saw Pee Wee Herman knew of that situation. I wonder how many. Guys, you know, because you think of that activity about a guy, you would think, oh, well, I'm glad they don't follow me around with a camera. I'm glad they don't, you know?
Right.
I mean, because, you know, there, but for the grace of God, I mean,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And well, it's like Sting, too. Is there any more popular, I mean, with Sting with the police, coolest guy in the world.
Yeah.
Sting solo, he's kind of schmaltzy. Yeah. Nobody likes it. I don't.
And Bono's that way, too.
And Bono's that way, yeah. Bono with you, too. Yeah, really, not by himself.
Really interesting. That's why you never want to peek. You never want to peek.
Is that it? Maybe.
How do you keep from peeking?
I don't know. I'm pretty good at it.
Well, now you're kind of.
I
don't want to say everywhere, but you do movies. You wrote a book. You do stand up.
There's, you know, I always describe
it
this way.
Is that a real danger with you and your? I'm not saying this in a sarcastic tone. Yeah. You and your team. Do you decide? Hey, we don't want to. We need to back it down a little bit.
No, I think that, I mean, it's, for me, it's, you know, I don't ever have to, you know, I always describe it this way. Like when I get on a plane, there might be some people in coach that know who I am, but everyone in first class has no idea who I am. So it's, you know, when I do corporate events, you know, there's the, you know, the CEO's children might know who I am, but none of the people at corporate events know who I am. Occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
But so I have a ways to go. You know, I mean, there's, you know, there's a lot of people that don't know.
Here comes a standard interview question that I try to avoid every time, but I want to know, what do you like down deep? What do you like the most, stand-up or acting or the book or TV? You were on not Six Feet Under, Sex and the City. I always get those two confused. I don't know why.
I would say, and here's the cop-out answer. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love acting. I hate the process of trying to get an acting job, but I think stand-up spoils creative people, and there's just too much immediacy.
And I know I say this. Oh yeah, I mean immediate gratification.
Right.
I mean that every now and then in the morning I'll make these three people laugh, but
yeah,
and that's kind of immediate. But there's nothing like being on stage and hosting and just, you know, saying stupid stuff and it just wash over you. It's really
Yeah, I mean it's a good, pretty dangerous drug, right?
It really is.
The only weird thing about doing stand up, which I think it took me some time to understand it, because also there's doing comedy club shows and then there's doing theaters. Like when you do theaters, it's like T-ball, right? Those people are coming to see you. They know your point of view. You're in a beautiful setting. So it's kind of like the ball is just there and you just get to
you just
hit
come
it.
Out, hi, everybody. Right. Big, huge, giant laugh.
And then the only problem is that after that, so you go from like king of the world to silence, right? So how do you deal with after that? And I think that was an adjustment for me, you know, was what do I do now? Do I go and have a beer? Do I go back to my room? What do I do? You know what I mean? So that was, I would say, an adjustment for me.
Do you go back to the bus and?
Well, some of it is, I think, you know, working at night can get you in trouble. It's very seductive. Well, you know, right?
Yeah.
It's like.
Sadly, I do. Yeah.
It's.
I know what kind of trouble you can get into and what kind of trouble you can dodge. Yeah, I know.
And it takes, you know, some organization, you know, it's like,
I never understood why people had people to, because you drove here today by yourself, right? And you're,
No, someone picked me up. No, someone from the show.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, if creative minds, if they're put in charge of themselves for too long, I totally get all that now.
I know. It seems, you know? It's, I remember why when I first started. Well, look, I don't want to get all tragic here, but I started stand-up comedy with Greg Giraldo, and he was the most put-together guy I know. He was the son of immigrants who went to Harvard Law. You know, it's like, when we would go out after we would do shows when we were starting, he was not the mess.
Right.
We were the guys that were showing up to open mics in suits because we held on to our day jobs, you know, because we were, so it's like, you know, it can get anyone, you know, it can get anyone. And the whole thing is like, you know, there's the path to AA and then there's also, so it's like some of me, it's like, I don't want to get in trouble, too much trouble, because I don't want to have to give up having a beer occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So.
Well, yeah, that is a pretty, I mean, but that's an extreme. To say you're never going to have that's an immense statement. I'm never going to have another drink of alcohol ever for as long as I live.
But there's, you know, there's probably, you know, there's, I mean, I could justify not doing that. I mean, I've made enough mistakes where I could say I shouldn't. But some of it is like, yeah, it's a different experience. It's. But, you know, who knows? I might be more successful if I did the AA route because there's a lot of people in those meetings.
Well, I was going to say, that's where all the deals are made.
Yeah.
I'm on my way to AA. I'm making a deal for a picture.
Can you say you're on your way to AA?
Well, I think if you personally are. Yeah. If you want to take off the anonymous part, you can, I guess. Right? Makes sense.
I don't know.
No? I have no idea. So. I don't know.
Do all creative people have an addictive personality? I think that...
I wonder. I think that most comedians have identity issues, meaning they are trying to recategorize themselves. So, you know, like, I look at Dave Attell, this nice Jewish boy from Long Island who is much more rough and tumble than he maybe was, in my view.
Right.
Or someone portrays maybe a... You know, you look at like Larry the Cable Guy, obviously that's character, but it's like, I think you see that around, you know, people want to, I think a lot of comedians want to be considered smarter than, you know what I mean?
No, I know exactly what you mean. I am that way. I mean, right? I'm not a stand-up, don't get me wrong, but I do kind of dabble in comedy.
Right.
And we've had this discussion off, you play a character on and on off the show. Here, and yeah. People don't get the fact that I'm not smart, crazy smart or intelligent or have a great IQ or anything like that, but I'm a normal guy, but I'm not nearly as stupid as some of the things I say on the radio show, but people think it's really frustrating when they come up to you and they want to relate to you on that level with that person and you just want to go, "Hey, hi, how you doing?" And that's not what they're getting, and that makes them mad.
No, it's strange because I think that I used to have this figured out, but like a lot of comedians, I think a lot of actors want to be politicians. A lot of comedians want to be musicians. I think a lot of sportscasters want to be comedians.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of, you know, I had this whole circle.
A lot of musicians want to be everybody. It seems like.
Yeah,
everybody wants to do something else. It's the old joke. Well, I want to direct or whatever. You know, whatever you're doing.
So many comedians want to be musicians.
Yeah, like
Mitch Hedberg, Ricky Gervais, they all wanted.
Yeah. Really?
Greg Giraldo wanted to be a musician.
Maron's crazy good on the guitar, and he won't give
Todd
it up.
Berry plays drums.
Todd Berry,
you know, it's so there's a lot of. I think there's, so some of them seek the rock and roll lifestyle. I never wanted to be a musician.
When you get to a place as a comedian and you're successful, it's nothing like you thought it would be. So then maybe you think, oh, well, maybe music is where I'll get that ultimate fulfillment. Maybe that's it.
I don't know. It's interesting how, you know, there's so many people that amazingly... are comedians or actors, and then you see them play the guitar. Like, I don't know, have you ever seen Michael J. Fox play the guitar?
Mm-mm.
I mean, it's pretty impressive. You know, it's like Woody Allen. You know,
yeah, playing the clarinet. Or, yeah.
It's. I mean, music is something that I just look at. It's like a foreign language. I wish that I wish I could.
Do you have any siblings that play?
Not really.
No, I don't know. I just wondered. Are any entertainers or
no other entertainers in my family?
Are you like? Well, I'm sure you're supported because you come from a nice, healthy family, right?
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, yeah.
No, because the stereotype would be, oh, here comes Mr. Big Steph. Here's Jim. He's still my brother, though. Hey, I heard you, Jim. Wham, or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I would say that when I started off, it was a little bit of. Poor crazy Jim. You know, stand
I have
up
a couple of friends like that, that it's uncomfortable to be around their family, how little they think of what he's doing.
Yeah, stand-up comedy has been assimilated as an acceptable occupation in the last 20 years. 20 years ago, it was a little bit... I mean, look, the story is show people, right?
Right, yeah.
Show people were... these crazy people, right? and comedians, but you know, I mean, look, my family was not perfect in any way. And I think that there is definitely some support, but not, you know, it would be, you know, some of the dynamics that exist would exist if I had a different occupation. If I was a chef, I think they'd still be like, so you got your own restaurant. But they're,
wonder how long that's going to last.
I think there's overall support and you know, some strange weirdness mixed in. I mean, family's family, right?
Family is family. Families, yeah.
Unfortunately.
Right?
Jason has the most normal family life, I would think, of anybody
I know. Yeah. I avoid all chaos.
He tries.
I'm pretty good at it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, that's true. I never hear of anything.
Nothing crazy going on.
You sure?
Mm-hmm.
It's weird because I try and joke around about family in general in this new hour, and I don't know if it'll end up in the special because there is a fine line where there's, I think that my comedy, I always try and bring a little bit light rather than like, you know, women are all whores, you know, or like, you know, us guys are horrible people. You know, that's not what my stand-up is.
Right.
And so when I talk a little bit about family as this, you know, like I had this line where I was like, you know, when I talk about family, I'm not talking about the people that I'm raising and ruining their lives. I'm talking about the people that I grew up with that turned me into a person that needs the approval of strangers in a theater, you know? And so there's a certain awareness, but I also don't want it to be that dark. But, you know, look, I love my family, but there is also, like, there is just, you know, a certain amount of chaos and rules that exist in every family dynamic that are not the result of, you know, abuse or anything like that. It's just strange family culture, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Very strange.
What is it like raising children nowadays? Because my youngest is 20.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a picnic then. So, I mean, not by saying that, I mean, there were more and more outside influences. But today, especially with the iPads and the screen time and the...
Yeah, well, screen time's definitely something you try and keep a control of. But, you know, my kids...
Jess has a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old.
Mm-hmm. 10 and 8?
And the screen time is...
Screen time's...
Monday through Friday, there's no screen time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same with us.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you... Well, I guess you just...
Well, some
it,
of
right?
it is... It's, you know, I remember thinking, oh, what are we going to do?
Mm-hmm.
They don't, you know, they might whine about it a little bit here and there, but they don't.
Mm-hmm.
I plainly remember my son, who's 22. When he was a baby, like one or two. And my wife at the time, we'd look at each other and go, well, we're not going to be one of those parents who put him down in front of a video and let him watch a movie. That's... No, we're gonna be active.
Yeah.
You know, a year later, he had all the Barney videos and all. Yeah, I mean,
you need to. I mean, I don't know. You don't need to, but there's also I don't know. You know, parenting is it's like why I wrote the book. It's like there's nothing more overwhelming where the chances of succeeding on to your standards are very slim.
Mm-hmm.
That it's terrifying, but it's also very gratifying. But I can't articulate why it's gratifying. Mm-hmm. I think that, like, being a dad, the most important thing I'll do in my life, beyond a doubt, right? And it's terrifying. And I almost think that, you know, I also talk about it in the book. I think it's made me a better person. So there's...
For sure.
You know what I mean?
No, I would be awful. I would be miserable and so self-involved and... I mean, all the things I kind of daydream about right now, but I don't... obviously it makes you a better person.
Yeah, I mean, it's really...
But you know what? Maybe that's not always the case because I can name a handful of people who are parents and they don't seem any better. They don't seem like...
Well, and then there's people without kids great people.
That are great people. Yeah.
I don't think Gandhi had any kids, did he?
Yeah, Indira Gandhi, the whole Gandhi family.
Mahatma Gandhi. Oh, Indira's her...
Yeah, all the Gandhis for like the past...
I was behind a car downtown the other day, and it was a brand new red Mercedes. And on their license plate, their vanity plate said, no kids. And I was just like, I don't know. I felt offended, and I didn't know why I was offended. I didn't know if maybe that's where it goes back to that jealousy thing where it's like, oh, I'm going to hate you because you don't have kids, and you're going to hate me because I do.
Why is that?
You know, I think, you know, that's really interesting, right? It's, we live in this
People who don't have kids seem to be so passionate and so insulted by people who do have
kids.
Like,
how could you be so dumb to have children?
There's a community, a suburb of New York City, that where single people do not want their money donated, their tax dollars used for the public schools. They want...
Mm-hmm. So they don't get the whole... They don't get the concept that if we have an educated society, that's a good thing.
No, these are very liberal people, too. These are, but they're saying that people that don't have kids have rights, too. And I don't know. I think we're kind of figuring it all out. But it's weird. You know, 12 years ago, I didn't think I was going to be married. I didn't think I was going to have kids. So I understand that point of view, but I also grew up where there were people that were born again Christians that would come up to you and say, if you died right now, would you go to heaven? Mm-hmm. And in high school, I found it really annoying, but now I'm kind of like, look, they're not the worst people on the planet.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There's mm-hmm. nothing, they're trying to be good people. So I don't know, people that, you know, like that feels pretty hostile. And I mm-hmm. almost feel like that might be overcompensating for something. It's, mm-hmm. and you know, maybe it is the jealousy thing, but I don't know. It's really weird because it almost reminds me when people say, I like your comedy. It's clean. It's, you're not filthy. You're clean. And it's weird because that's not a reason to like someone's comedy. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, it's, mm-hmm. it's not as if we live in this era where everyone's saying fuck shit balls, you know, all the time, where it's like, come see this show where he doesn't curse.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's weird. I don't know. I think that's a pretty hostile thing, right?
I think so.
Did you honk at him and flip him off or anything?
No, my kids were in the car. And I said, well, that doesn't seem very nice, does it? My son goes, I'm not going to have kids.
Right. Okay. But when you're, you know.
You're 10.
Yeah.
When you're 10. Yeah. When you're 20. Yeah. You don't think like, I'm going to voluntarily, you know, give up all this freedom in my life.
I do tell my kids a small fib that it is illegal to get married or have children before you're 30. And he said, well, you did. And I said, well, that's because they hadn't passed the law yet.
Mm. Yeah.
So. I don't know. Probably a bad idea, but
no, I lie to my kids all the time. I do.
What's the last lie you told them? Mm. Or there's so many you can't think of one.
There's a fair amount of them. They know some of them, right? Mm-hmm. So some of it is I'm joking to make a point.
Yeah.
Where I'll say, you know, I'll be eating chocolate pudding. And they'll be like, can I have a bite? And I'll be like, you know, this was made from horses. And they'll be like, it wasn't. And I'm like, maybe it wasn't. You still want a bite? And they're like, no. So it's,
I mean, but the important part is you get to eat your pudding.
Yeah. I'm not standing in the closet eating it. Not anymore. But I don't know. It's weird. It's weird being, I don't know why we have to be on sides or teams mm-hmm. of like parents and
people without kids.
And people without kids, atheist Christians. It's like, come on. Mm-hmm. I don't care. It's nobody else's business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It really is nobody else's
business. But everyone else wants to know, what are you?
Yeah.
Are you left or you're right?
Does it matter?
You know? Yeah. I don't know why, but
right,
people
but that's
do
always
that.
A big
people
deal.
Are
it's,
peop-
but there's, but it's with everything in life.
People
it's,
are nosy.
It's, mm-hmm. I was at a mom blog thing the other day, and it was hosted by a huge fast food chain, the biggest fast food chain. And these women come in. You were invited. Nobody told you you had to come. You were invited to this. Well, my kids don't eat this. We don't eat this. We have to get the Caesar salads and that gets expensive. When are you going to make that part of kids' meal? And it's just like, this is a service. This isn't an everyday thing. You don't have to feed your kid here every day. Right, but when you need to run through a drive-thru, it's helpful. It's there.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And thanks.
Sure.
And no, the same thing with movies. Yeah, the same thing with movies is, you know, you don't have to sit your kid in front of the movies all day. But when you need an hour or your kids need a break from you, sit them in front of the TV.
And the kids will love the videos, probably, you know?
I mean, it's always the extreme is always the stereotype.
It's all in moderation,
yes,
too, right?
Everything.
It's like not every meal. Mm-hmm. But It's like, you're going to drive in a car for 3 hours. Mm-hmm. I mean, we wrote about it, my wife and I, because she was instrumental in this. It's like you don't want to do the fast food, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the thing is, so you don't do the fast food. So you get to a hotel, and instead of getting chicken nuggets, you get the hotel's frozen deep fried nuggets for $20.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Right.
You know, it's, you know, ideally it would be great if my kids only ate kale. I mean, look, there's times when, like, mm-hmm. I see a babysitter feeding, a 2-year-old a hot dog. I'm like, no, 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 you can feed him only vegetables. He doesn't know.
Right. Right. Yes,
but
exactly.
It's also not the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
If he eats a hot dog, yeah.
But you know what?
He's not on life support. It's like, it's okay for them to have a French fry.
Right.
I don't know, but then again, I'm a fat guy.
And you always try to, well, I think in general, parents, you just always want to do better for your children than what you had. And I don't even mean like financially and they get all the toys and all these things, but that my kids are somewhat health conscious. It's huge, right? It's more, I mean, we ordered our dinner either from a gas station or off the Schwann truck. That's how it worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was just, and it just kind of depended on if we were with our mom or our dad, which one we got. But, you know, you just try to do better the next time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like my parents both chain smoked, but they would tell us not to smoke.
Don't
Mine
smoke,
too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and
I would ride in a closed car 25 miles in the winter with those two up front smoking. They had the wing open or whatever you call that little triangle.
Which only gave it some power.
Oh, yeah. And it would only blow in the back seat and your eyes
it's
would be red.
It's good for the fuel mileage.
Yeah. And all your clothes would smell like a tavern. And
they're bringing back that triangle window. It's in one of the new cars.
Oh, is it?
Really? I saw that. Yeah.
All right. Well, Jim, how do we find out all things? JimGaffigan.com, right?
JimGaffigan.com.
And you're on Twitter at Jim Gaffigan?
At Jim Gaffigan.
And why aren't you on Vine yet? Are you on Vine? You got to start making
videos.
I'm
on Vine.
Are you on Vine?
I think I can't figure it out.
Oh, you can't figure it out.
I think I'm on Instagram.
Are you on Instagram?
Because I'm a 13-year-old girl.
Oh.
I'm on Instagram.
Are you on Instagram?
I am on Instagram.
You can make videos on Instagram now. 16 seconds.
Mm-hmm. I mean, look, I you know, Twitter and those things, it's ended up being, I think, a pretty important part of my writing process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is I can throw things out there. Like, I threw something out there, and sometimes I'll run it by Jeannie. And last night, I woke up at midnight, and I had this idea about Rob Ford, the mayor.
Toronto
and I
mayor,
just did the tweet where I said, ha, 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 there's a mayor who's addicted to a drug. Ha, ha, ha. He's morbidly obese. And then I just said everyone, right? Because I thought it was funny how we're just essentially laughing at someone who has these problems. Mm-hmm. And I sent it, and she sent me a text this morning when I was doing the show, and she's like, that's not funny. Like, I wouldn't have tweeted it, but it's not the end of the world. You know, if you tweet something out.
But everybody can laugh at him because he's way overweight, right?
You don't read the comments. You don't read people's responses.
I do.
You do?
I do.
And you don't take it personally ever when it's negative?
I usually have to stop. Like, sometimes my wife will read, she'll be like, you should respond to that person. And I'll be like, no, that's what they want.
Right.
Well, Marin has a real problem with that. He will keep it
engage
going.
Engage in Twitter
for
wars.
Days.
Yes.
He has tracked someone down. Cross-referenced their Facebook. I mean, he one of
found
his shows
their address.
Had an episode about it and where this guy would be on a Tuesday afternoon at 2:30, and he went and confronted the guy. I think he's only done this once,
but he talked about.
That's not good. Yeah,
no, that's I think it's people want attention, and it's also people that, you know, it's negative energy, right?
Yes,
it is so, negative energy.
I had to get off Twitter.
Oh, you
energy.
Did?
Yeah, it was just
Twitter.
A bummer.
It's partially due to we can't.
You know, but there's a lot of people. A lot of people say a lot of nice things, but then I would just get so wrapped up
fixate
in the guy
on,
that was.
Well, that's
not
like when
nice.
You do stand up. There's always one face that doesn't think
yes,
you're funny.
Yeah.
If there's 100 people there. Yeah. There's one person that's like, "This is the worst show I've ever been."
And
to.
And, mm-hmm. and you find his face in
yep.
the crowd, don't you?
Yep. So you have to. I don't know. That's why you just can't give it. You can't give your power away to that.
I had a couple questions. Can I ask?
Sure.
Sierra Mist, the Holiday Hawk. Do you get a case of that every year sent to you still? I mean,
I don't know. Is that still airing?
I don't.
What
I don't,
is it?
I do miss the Holiday Hawk.
I don't know.
Every time I see I think they still sell it in the wintertime.
I see Sierra Mist,
and I think of the commercials you did. How long ago was that? Do you know?
I think
that was a good 10 years ago.
What did the Holiday? I forget it now.
I don't
what
even
did
remember
he do?
The commercial.
Yeah.
They've got the
cranberry.
The cranberry Sierra Mist.
Yes, they still have it.
Yeah. But this hawk comes out of nowhere. I don't know. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
You threw me
but
with
I remember.
The hawk. I was like, was it?
And what other commercial did you do with a bunch of people? Was it Doctor? No, what was it? I have not. I'm not helping anyone trying to remember this.
I remember one in an airport.
Was it a Super Bowl commercial?
Oh yeah, you mean for Sierra Mist? Yeah, I did a bunch of Sierra Mist commercials. I did three series of them.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And Michael Ian Black and I were in all of them.
Yeah.
And we would kind of, look at the script and go, all right, I'll be this guy, you be that guy. That was fun. It's weird. You know, it's like sketch comedy is, again, comedians are spoiled by... having control. You're the writer, director, and performer, right? So when we would do those, we would kind of have fun. But Michael has like a healthier detachment from it. Like I would be like, we should do this. And they're like, no, just do it this way. And I'm like, okay. Right.
He seems like he would be hard to get to know.
Michael Ian Black is really funny. I mean, he's got a sharp wit where... Mm. I remember I did a quote for his book, and I was like, he is the most terrifying person I know in comedy, because when I did a sketch show with him on VH1, I remember one time I got in kind of like a verbal argument with him where we were just sniping at each other, and it was just, he had just like a sickle. He was just like, and I was just like, after that, I was like, all right, okay, I will never threaten this man again.
I used to, I don't know if they still do it or not, but... Showalter and Wayne, that Stella show. I live for that show.
Yeah. No,
I don't know why it went away, and I don't know why they can't find, or maybe he doesn't want to do it. Maybe he doesn't want to do a regularly scheduled series anywhere, but I...
No, I think he does. I think it's...
Just can't find the right thing, maybe.
I think it's just kind of, he will, but it's just not yet.
Did you ever want to have a radio show early on?
A radio show?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think...
Radio's a dead end.
I don't know. I mean, it's weird because, with the podcast, there is part of me that I enjoy talking to people that I, like, it's great to have this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am jealous of some of my friends that get to have these conversations. And
well, you brought up an interesting point today, too, about why, do you remember what you even said about podcasts and why you think they're popular?
What did I say?
Because
no, he doesn't remember.
Because it's you said it was a good chance for comedians to get together and talk with each other because it almost never ever happened.
Yeah,
which I think is totally true. It's just life kind of when you're starting off in stand up, you spend a lot of time with people, and then as you get more successful, you're traveling, and then you get married, and then somebody might get an acting job or something. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you get promoted within the same company. It's kind of crossing paths with someone. I also don't live in LA, so it's like I don't see, people get successful, and then they usually move.
Did they film My Boys out in LA, assume? I assume that was that kind of... I mean, you weren't used as much. I mean, I don't think they used you real well in there, but...
Well, My Boys was, we would shoot like 8 episodes in a row. So it would be like 8 weeks. And so at the time I had 2 kids, so we would move from New York to LA for 8 weeks. And it was, and I loved everyone that worked on the show, but I felt as though when I was doing it, I was kind of like... And it's one thing if you have like 3 lines in an episode and you're there for one day. But I ended up being there every day and I still had nothing to do. So that's where, I mean, at the end of My Boys, I was like, I don't know if I want to do the acting thing. Because I'm spoiled by stand-up.
Right.
And, I love acting, but the process of getting a job or just... Mm-hmm. You know, because I think it's, you know this from performing. It's a little bit of a buzz. It's not about, because, you know, if you're on a show and you're complaining, people are like, you're complaining about being on a television show. And it's not that. It's like you're searching for creative fulfillment. Mm-hmm. It's probably why you're doing this podcast.
Oh, it absolutely is why
it's,
I'm doing this
podcast. It's an inconvenience, but it's fulfilling.
No, I'm very proud of this podcast for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
And I'm especially proud of this episode.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I didn't even ask what it was. We're going to ask him about. Oh, so we didn't get to talk to Super Troopers or working with because you get recognized a lot for that, the meow guy, right?
Yeah.
Do you remember that scene in Super Troopers?
Yes.
That's just, that movie, it's interesting.
Because you were only in it for like, 5 minutes maybe?
And I worked a half a day on it. And I had auditioned for a bigger part and they offered me this guy that they meow at. And it was, it was one of those things where that movie, it kind of just has staying power too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who can explain those movies that come out, are released, aren't that popular, somehow get a new life on one of the HBOs or Cinemax or Showtimes, and then all of a sudden DVDs, and then it has a whole new, Office Space was that way.
Yeah.
It was just like, it was kind of lukewarm, and now, it's probably one of the most watched movies of all time,
Yeah, yeah.
You weren't in that, no.
No. I wasn't.
No.
Do you remember your first theater gig? And the feeling you had,
It was just me?
Yes, just you. You headlined a theater.
I think the first time I really headlined a theater was officially, I think I did something in Champaign, maybe. But I think the first real theater show I did was the taping of Beyond the Pale.
Oh, okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I might have had a Friday night show and then, no, I think I had just the Saturday shows, because I think I was doing zany clubs around Chicago leading up to it.
All right.
But that was, that was that theater. But
Do you think you're going to be in any more, do you want to be in any more movies?
Yeah, I'd love to.
Yeah.
But, some of it is I feel like I live in the wrong town, and I also feel like, I don't know if I was talking to you about this or Tom. There's something about, I can kiss ass, I can work hard, but there's a certain thing about schmoozing that I don't feel like I'm that good at. And even when I started in stand-up, I don't think I was that good at it. So I feel like that's a problem.
I would love to be better at schmoozing than I am.
Do you know what I mean?
Chick's the worst in those meetings with his body language and his
just, I'm just I
and
can't,
his glares and I his just, constant
if
look
I'm
at his
not,
phone.
I just don't. If I don't want to be somewhere, it's painfully apparent to everyone involved.
Well, if there's someone, the entertainment industry is so filled with hierarchy, right? Mm-hmm. Which I kind of I'm repulsed by. I went to a small high school. There wasn't the John Hughes jocks and all that. So I wasn't really, so hierarchy to me is I kind of shrink away from it. It's, my wife makes fun of me. She's like, there's Jerry Seinfeld, go and talk to him. And I'll be like, and she'll be like, just go over, you know him, go over and say hi. And talk to him. And I was like, no. Like, I'm just, there's no reason, you know? It's not like I think he's, it's not that I think he's better than me. I just, some of it is, I don't know, maybe it's like the generations of peasant in me. It's like,
I was going to say, is it because you don't want to, because for me in that situation, it gets back to my mother, and she was so paranoid about everyone. And not only was I bothering her by existing, but I feel like I'm bothering other people if I go up and even if I know them, I don't want to just give them be it.
I don't know. No, I don't, no. I think that I'm also very much a loner. Like there's certain kind of you know, kind of clicks that I'm kind of like, I'd rather sit in my room than, you know, when I'm in town, you know, there's people I could look up. It's not that I dislike the people. I like my alone time, you know, and
well, there's nothing wrong with that.
And going out in LA and kind of schmoozing and making friends. It's an important thing, but I don't think I've got it. You know, I wish there was some romantic explanation for it, but I probably, and again, I can kiss ass. I can sit there and going back to when I first started coming on Bob and Tom, I knew that Bob and Tom was important. You guys, you know, the door was open. And so I came in and I don't feel like I had to kiss ass here, but I definitely worked it. But in other aspects, I would be like, you know, like Howard Stern and even opening an Anthony. I'm kind of like, you know, I should probably try and get on there. But, you know, I forget it. You know what I mean? It's like it would be better for my career.
Well.
But I'm like, you know, all right, no.
I think you have a fine career, Jim. I think you're okay. All right. Don't you think Jim's okay, Jason?
He went to Purdue for a year, so yes, he's just fine with me.
Oh, that's nice. Right. All right. Well, thank you, Jim.
Well, thank you. I'm just worried.
You got a problem?
I got to be at my hotel in an hour, so I think that's not a problem.
No, right? You're close.
Unless your hotel's...
Is it far away?
No, he's just up the hill.
Oh, okay. He's just up the hill.
You're up the hill.
It's so funny how, like, it's like 10 minutes away, but like in Indianapolis, it's like, oh, that's like you guys describe it like a half a block.
Yeah.
Like to me, I'm like, oh, we're going to have to, what if there's a flat tire? You guys are like, oh, that's nothing. That's only 8 miles away.
Construction around here has been pretty bad recently. I don't know what the hell the deal is, but all right. Thanks, everybody.
But this was fun.
Was it fun? Did you have a good time?
Yeah, I had a great time.
All right. JimGaffigan.com. Go look at that and see that. Thank you for downloading the podcast. We'll talk to you next time. Thanks again, Jim.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody. Give me a kiss. I got a castle in the Paris, got a crib in the city. I said I'd get you something nice, something pretty, and I did.